Well, we were talking about the femininity of the universe, the way in which the creation of things is a feminine process. There has to be a masculine counterpart. Everything in the universe, everything in creation, everything that we see, we validate by finding its complement and its opposite. For every flat, there has to be a tall. For every male, there has to be a female. For every up, there has to be a down. For every black, there has to be a white. So if there is a feminine here, and the feminine is so strong, there has to be an equal and opposite masculine. And we have to find that too. And we have to find that in exactly the same place, because this one diagram serves the entire purpose. We're going to do that in 1 second. But before I do, I want to give you a little bit more information about the feminine, which will make what we do with tarot very, very much more understandable. This movement of the four circles downwards as a kind of feminine excitement is emerging from the nothing and the before the nothing that existed from Ein Sof. And it moves steadily and continuously and complexly and subtly downwards until it becomes visible and real. In this movement from the indescribable to the real, I call the movement of emergence. The world is emerging from out of nowhere. And this movement of emergence is what we call the feminine. So when you see, when you look at tarot, and you take the order of the suits that we have given you, which is a product of the thinking of Hermetic practitioners for a long, long time, of wand, cup, sword, and pentacle in that order. What you're doing is looking at the emergence of the universe, and it's a feminine order of emergence. When that order is complete, when the last circle is put in place, and the 10 numbers are expressed, and the cube of space is born, and the 22 parts that make the letters and the trumps are all born as well. When all of that has been done, and all of this, remember, is done before there's any time or space. So there's no order of succession. All of this is done, from our standpoint, in a single instant. When that is all done, the four circles drop to the bottom. 1, 2, 3, 4. And they become one circle. All you can see is one circle. They're congruent. They disappear one behind the other. So all four worlds look like one world. And even the one world by itself, if you think of the last world, which is Asiya, the world of making, and when you think of Malkuth, which is the world of the kingdom, the world of incarnation, even those last things, before the compression of the four circles, before the four worlds become one, they are as invisible and as unfinished as any other part of the structure. But when the process of emergence is complete, and the four become one, and the 10 become one, and the 22 become one, at that point, the real world emerges. And as the real world emerges, the hidden world disappears. The process is completely covered in the product. Which is why the real world looks every bit as mysterious, every bit as unknowable, every bit as unexplainable as the indescribable origin from which it comes. Reality, solid substance reality, is just as mysterious as God. So it's not strange that people should be so enamored of it, that people should be so attached to it. It's real, and it's also divine, and it has the same exact power because it's the same exact thing. There is no difference between the beginning and the end. There is a saying in Kabbalah that the end is embedded in the beginning, and the beginning is embedded in the end. So be aware that when the movement of emergence is complete, only then does the real world come into existence. Don't think that the Ten of Pentacles alone, that Malkuth of Asea alone, is reality. It isn't. By itself, it's as unreal, as invisible, as insubstantial, as misty, as any of the other numbers and worlds and sephirot and qualities that you can find in this whole process. So, where does that leave us? We have a completed world now. And the world is very thick, where before everything was very thin. Everything was thin to the point of invisibility. Now everything is thick and solid and dark. The light has become solid. Reality has come into existence as a solid universe, and that solidness is literally without light. Even the appearance of light to our senses, what we think of as light, is part of the darkness of physical reality. And from a certain point of view, and you can find traces of this in the esoteric titles that are given to some of the trumps, in this darkness is nothing but dream and sleep. Reality, from a certain perspective, is a dream. The attachment to reality as the only existing thing is a dream. But it's a dream from which it's almost impossible to awaken. It's so compelling that you could sleep and dream forever and be completely caught up in the phantasms of your own creation. However, for each person, for each item, for each object in force that has its awareness inside the world of dream, inside the real world, for each one of those, there is a moment of awakening. There's a wish, even in the midst of sleep, there's a struggle to wake up. There's a time when even in the middle of a dream, all you want to do is wake up. The impulse to awaken is the beginning of the masculine movement. The awakening itself, when it happens, is the beginning of a spiritual path. It's the path of the spiritual seeker. Whatever tradition he follows, wherever she goes, whatever happens along that path, whatever the details, it's the search, the need to awaken, and the need to climb up out of the depths of sleep that can be described as masculine here. It's the exact reverse of the movement of emergence. We call this the movement of return. And this can be described as the four worlds, these four circles, beginning to rise. It's a form of masculine arousal. And so feminine orgasm becomes masculine arousal, literally becomes an erection. And this is true for animate and inanimate things. The alchemists say that if you leave lead in the ground long enough, it will seek its own perfection as gold. That everything tends, automatically and by its nature, to seek its own perfection. And this seeking for perfection is the same as the seeking for awakening. And the process of awakening, when it's finished, can be described as the end of the game of hide and seek that the Creator plays with himself. So, what you have then is a movement of emergence and a movement of return, a falling asleep and an awakening. And both of those things, the final falling asleep and the beginning of awakening, both take place here at the very end of the process in what is called reality. Does this lead to any questions or thoughts?
I have a thought or sharing. While you're talking about these worlds, and I'm looking at the pattern, and it made me think about seeing a picture of when, I guess it's when, like, the sperm and the ovum split. You see that same pattern.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this stuff is actually found in nature.
Nature is nothing but this stuff.
Okay, right. Okay.
It
helps me think about it in a way of making sure I understand it.
Yeah, well, I will tell you another thing, which isn't exactly a secret. It's simply one of those things which you may know and you may not know. In the tradition of Kabbalah, it could be said that the absolutely essential, perhaps the only energy that exists in the entire universe is sexual energy. We think of sex as the kind of sex that we have physically in this world between men and women. We see it also, mirrored in the relationships between animals. There are many forms of sexuality which do not involve, in physical sexuality, which don't involve a coupling of opposites, but still the splitting in two. It's really interesting that in the mating of higher organisms, two join to become one. In the lower organisms, such as, amoebas and one-celled creatures, which is sort of at the opposite end of the chain, one divides to become two. But the nature of one and two, the nature of round and straight, the nature of polar opposites, the nature of emergence and return, of sleeping and waking, is the nature of everything in this universe. It can be found in electricity, it can be found in gravity, it can be found in all the forces that are generally described with much complexity in the worlds of science, and also in mysticism, and also in religion, and also in poetry, and in all the fields of action and activity, from politics to war to economics. It doesn't really make any difference. All of it depends on and is an expression of the duality of male and female.
Okay, so basically in studying this, you absolutely do get a better and deeper understanding of life and what people go through.
Absolutely.
Okay.
The primary purpose of this is to understand yourself. Because when you look in a mirror, there's nothing more mysterious than yourself. When you look at another person, you're looking at a version of yourself.
Right.
When you look at the world, you're looking at the shape of yourself. Because regardless of what apparent physical shape you have, everything has the same shape. Everything is made of the same forces expressed in different ways. And when you work with a deck of cards, when you read tarot, when you investigate the possibility of another person's life, all you're doing is investigating the various combinations and permutations of male and female. There's only one and two, or better should I say, zero and one. You are probably familiar with the fact that the organizing principle of the computer is the binary system of mathematics, which uses nothing but zeros and ones to express everything. So anyway, that's what you're looking at here too. You're looking essentially at a binary universe. There's more to it than that, because there's a tertiary thing, there's a trinity, there's a third element. But for our purposes here, in discussing what we're discussing tonight, only the binary matters. Now comes the question of the last set of cards that we haven't discussed at all, that we haven't even brought into the issue, which need to be discussed here, which are the court cards. And the court cards are placed in a relationship to the tree according to one or another of various ways of expressing the four worlds. There are different ways, different pictures you can make to discuss four worlds. We see here that there are four circles, and from the four circles we develop the 10 numbers, and the 10 numbers are the tree of life, but we should also realize that the tree of life is repeated four times. The tree of life expresses one whole world by itself. So Atzilut is one tree of life. Bria is one tree of life, etc. Each one of the four worlds is expressed in its fullness by its own tree of life. So that's why you get 40 numbers instead of 10, because the tree of life expresses itself four times in the four worlds, and that's why you have 10 numbers in each one of four suits. It is possible to show how the tree of life can contain all four worlds in one tree. In fact, there are several different ways of showing how the four worlds can be found in one tree and in several trees and in interlocking trees and multiple trees and stuff. Lots and lots of ways of doing that, but I'm going to show you the one form of things that is most common here in the work that we do. If you were to take a look, I don't know if you have a tree of life diagram with you, but even if you don't, if you're working with the four worlds and you just have the 10 numbers that we described to you before and their positions on this four worlds diagram, you will remember that we have a left and a right side, that we have a Chochma and a Bina. And Chochma is usually given the honor of representing the first world of Atzilut. The whole world of fire, all the possibilities of the Father, everything that we described that's connected with the first world of Atzilut can be relegated, can be described as belonging to the position on the tree of Chochmah. Everything that is likewise associated with the mother, all the forms of water, cups, heart, and feelings, all the things that we described before, can be associated and contained within the one position, one sephira of Bina, the mother. So the first two worlds are contained within the sephirot of number two and number three. It's said that the third world, which is the world of air, the world of Yetzirah, the world of formation, the suit of the sword, all of that can be found in the sixth sephirot below the supernal triad. So from the very center, from the middle triad and the lower triad between them, Chesed and Gevura and Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, and Yesod, between them, form the third world, the world of the mind, the world of air, the world of formation, the world of measure and definition, order and system. That's all to be found there, and specifically at the center of that world, which is in the position of Tiferet. You can say that the whole of the third world can be located in the position of Tiferet, which is number six. And then they say that the fourth world, the world of the pentacle, the world of earth, the world of the daughter, can be found in its entirety in the Sephira of Malkuth. That tenth Sephira contains the entire fourth world. Well, now remember that we have a father and a mother and a son and a daughter, and we have four court cards. And the attribution has been made in several different ways of where to put the court cards in those four positions. A world, an entire world, can be represented by one court card. Obviously, if you consider, the mother to be represented by the queen, all you need to do is find a place on the tree where the mother can be found, put the queen there, and you know where the queens belong. You could say that all the queens in Tarot belong in Bina, in the world of the cup. It has been said. There is a system of attribution which says that the father is the equivalent of the king. And the king, because it's the father, belongs in Chochmah. So between Chochmah and Bina, number two and number three on the tree, you have the placement of the kings and the queens. And they say, well, if the kings and the queens are up there, the son, who is the younger male, the son would be placed in Tiferet. That's the place where the son belongs, the third world. And the fourth world, the world of the daughter, must therefore belong to the page, which is the only court card left. And although the page is oftentimes in modern day thought to be either gender, just a young person, in esoteric or magical terms, the page is understood to be the daughter. And so they place the daughter in Malkuth. And so you have an order of king and queen, knight and page, going down the tree in that particular way. That is a form that is common in the tradition of tarot that's connected with Bota, with B-O-T-A and Paul Foster Case. That's a very standard one. It's become very, very popular and very widespread, and is probably the most well-known of the various systems. And this accounts for where the court cards are placed and what their significance is when we think of it in terms of the Tree of Life and Kabbalah. There is another tradition that basically comes from the same time and the same root material, from Golden Dawn material that connects Tarot with all this stuff. That is the tradition of Crowley. Aleister Crowley, what he did was he created a deck in which there was no king. There was a knight and a queen and a prince and a princess. So he placed the knight in Chochmah and the queen in Bina, and he placed the prince in Tiferet and the princess and Malkuth. So, in a way, it's sort of the same thing, except he doesn't have a king. He has a knight and a queen taking the place of the king and queen. And things shift slightly. It's a different system, and it leads to different conclusions, and it leads to different usages and different ways of dealing with tarot. But it's not all that dissimilar.
Well, and which one do you recommend?
Well, now I'm going to tell you, I have something. I'm going to give you another system which is very little known and which has its own virtues. I'm going to let you choose the one that you like. I'm not going to try and dictate this to you because there is a very large body of people who follow each of these things, except for the last one. And the last one, to me, is the most interesting. And it's based on the principle of emergence and return. It's based on the principle that it's feminine going in one direction and masculine going in the other. It's based on the principle that youth is at the beginning and age is at the end of any process. Those three things. So there is, to me, the system that I like the best is a double ordering of the court cards. In the process of emergence, on the way into reality, the knight, the youthful male, is in the position of the father, and the youthful female, the page, is in the position of the mother. And the idea being that father and mother are actually a sexual union, and that the initial sexual union, the sexual union of emergence, is that of youth. Young people, young energies, coupling and creating. And that as they grow older, as they become more mature, they and their offspring get older and wiser and more mature as well. And as they come closer and closer to the end of the process of emergence, they become more and more solid, they become older and grayer, and heavier and slower and more powerful. And the king occupies the position of Tiferet, and the queen occupies the position of Malkuth on the road of emergence. But when the will to awaken arises at the bottom of the process, everything is reversed. A whole new energy is born. And instead of a feminine, it becomes a masculine energy. But the process is, in a way, very similar. The union of male and female is young again because it's the beginning of a new process. So the queen becomes the page, the king becomes the knight, and they occupy Malkuth and Tiferet on the way up the process. On the journey of return, youth begins the process once again. And at the very end of the process, when awakening is complete and the spiritual return is complete and the game of divine hide-and-seek is complete, the king sits in Chokhmah and the queen sits in Bina. And wisdom and age, experience and power are in their proper places. And they now represent, instead of a constantly thickening ignorance, they now represent a constantly ephemerizing, refining of wisdom.
Well, yeah. You just said that the queen sits in Bina, but I thought we had reversed that.
Only in the process of return does the queen sit in Bina. In other words, on the way down the tree.
Okay, got it, okay.
That's one way, on the way up the tree, it's the other. So all that happens is that we're looking at the beginning of a process beginning with youth and the ending of the process ending with age. And there's one process going into the world and another process returning from it. And so the court cards change their qualities, depending on which way you're going, what's happening. It's very much more subtle, and it's more difficult to manage in attribution, but it represents what's actually going on.
Does this pertain to a particular deck of tarot cards?
No. It's just an order of things. So what happens is that not only do the court cards change their order, but the court cards change your order. The order of the suits doesn't change. It's just that you're beginning the process of return in Asiya and ending the process of return in Atsulut. So the very end of the circle, when the circle is complete, you've gone all the way around from the top to the bottom and then again from the bottom to the top, you end the world in the same place that you started it. There is a tradition, very widespread, and you can find it in many places, that the world is created as an out-breath, and the world is withdrawn and reconstituted as an in-breath. So the idea of male and female, the idea of the polarity of opposites, takes also the form of the out-breath and the in-breath. And on the out-breath, the world is created, and on the in-breath, the world is withdrawn. And so the entire process is a single round of breath of the divine energy. And all of us and all the things that we see around us are simply a portion, a part of that rotation of breathing. And this is where the depths of tarot become really, really deep indeed. This is where it becomes a major, major issue as to what you do with the knowledge that you gain. Obviously, tarot is mainly used for doing readings, for helping people get through the difficult portions of their life, for giving them advice, and letting them know how they can sidestep and avoid the worst of the bad things that are coming at them. But it's also a way of enlightening and enlivening the process of spiritual seeking. It becomes a major, major spiritual path all by itself. And so that's pretty much what I wanted to leave you with. That's where I want it to be, so that you know that there are two things you can do. And when they talk about using tarot as a means of transformation or a means of, you know, meditation or whatever, instead of it being a kind of new age fuzziness, it becomes something very solid and very clear. When we get together next week and we talk about the paths, when we talk about the letters and the trumps and the paths, we'll discuss the issue of the possibility of using tarot as a spiritual system. So anyway, until that time comes, until next week, I want to thank you very much for being here, and I want to wish you a very, very good evening.